Hello and welcome to the media call on the adoption of IFRS 9 and 17 at Allianz. Here with me are our CFO Giulio Terzariol and our Global Head of Accounting Roman Sauer. Today's media call is special. It is a roundtable for journalists only in order to get familiar with one of the most important accounting changes of the past two decades. Hence, we offer you this call to explain the standard and, moreover, how it is expected to impact Allianz numbers directionally. Although we believe the standard is better reflecting an insurer's business, it may raise questions, as it is quite a revolution. So please use the opportunity after the presentation to ask your questions. Should you prefer to ask your question in German, we will translate it in English for you. Also note, the telephone conference is not streamed via YouTube, as it is basically a teach-in for you. A transcript is available on request after the call. We are here to help you to hopefully appreciate the new standard as we do. With that, I hand over to Giulio Terzariol, CFO of Allianz. Please, Giulio.
Thank you, Holger, and good afternoon and good morning to everybody. And as Holger said, this is a presentation about the implementation of IFRS 9 and 17. And that's a presentation about giving you some insight in what this means for Allianz. A disclaimer, the numbers in the presentation are illustrative and some concepts have been simplified. When I said that the numbers are illustrative, it means these are not the final numbers, and also we have used some approximation. Still, the idea is to give you some good insight in what's in how the numbers look could look like down the road. So it's illustrative, but clearly there is a link to what our numbers are. So if we move to page, If we move to page four, on the summary, the fundamentals of the business are clearly unchanged. And I would also say when you look at the financials, you're going to see that there are no major changes regarding operating profit, net income. The ROE is going to be a little bit higher, but fundamentally you don't see a lot of changes in the stated profit. However, the disclosure is definitely, in my opinion, much better compared to the disclosure that we had previously, and this is especially true for the life segment. In the case of the property casualty segment, I would say that it was always easy to communicate the financial of the segment, but in the case of the life business, that was a little bit more complicated in the past, and now we believe we have an accounting system that can create more transparency. As always, when there is a change in accounting, there is some complexity associated with it, and there is also a need to adjust to the new framework. This said, I would say that the new system is not more complex compared to the old system. I would even argue that the new system might be easier once we get adjusted to it. And again, the transparency is, in my opinion, much greater compared to before. So from an Allianz point of view, we are kind of excited about this this change, and we see this in a positive light. Now coming to page five. That's important. Today is not just about IFRS 17, which is about the measurement of the insurance liability. Today is also about IFRS 9, which is the standard regarding the measurement of the investment portfolio. In the insurance business, clearly assets and liability had to talk to each other, so the implementation of IFRS 9 has been influenced by the implementation of IFRS 17. This is also the reason why the implementation of IFRS 9 has been postponed in order to be in line with the implementation of IFRS 17. So it's very important that we look at these two standards together in the case of insurance company. Now, if we move to page six, starting from IFRS 9, there is a new classification of investments. When you look at our investment portfolio, about 80% of the assets are in fixed income. And of these 80% of assets in fixed income, the majority is accounted through fair value, with changes of the fair value reflected in the balance sheet but not in the P&L. There is just a small component where the change in the fair value of the assets is going to be reflected in the P&L. So from that point of view, there is not a change, a significant change, compared to what we had before. Public equity, in the past, the public equity, the change was in the OCI, so in the balance sheet, with an impairment method. Now we have evaluation fair value with changes in also in the balance sheet, and there is not necessarily an impairment method anymore. So basically, all what you see coming from equity in the P&L is going to be the coupon, and there are no realized gains, there are no realized losses, and there are no impairments. So that's the difference from the new system to the old system. In the old system, we had also realized gains, losses, and impairment coming through the P&L. Then on the non-consolidated funds, this is a bunch of assets where the fair value swings are going to reflect in the P&L. So this is going to cause some level of accounting volatility. I'm going to speak about that in a second. And then for real estate and participation, in the past, these asset classes were basically recognized, if you want, at cost in the case of real estate, or with an equity system in the case of participation. Right now, because of a better matching between asset liability, we are going to make mostly use of the fair value option. So that's basically the change which is happening to our assets classification. If we go to page 7, what is the outcome of this change? When you look at the amount of assets for which the fair value swings go through the P&L, this amount is increasing from 6% of our assets to about 18% of our assets. So it's a significant amount of assets where the swings are going to go now through the P&L instead of being through the balance sheet. Now, the majority of these assets are in the life business. So from that point of view, there will be a one-on-one offset on the liability side, so this is not going to create volatility, but there is a component of assets in the property casualty business where there is not necessarily a matching from a liability point of view, and this is going to create some additional volatility in our numbers. Otherwise, I would say for the rest, there are no major implications. So the takeaway is different classification of assets, some additional assets value at fair value through the P&L, with some increased volatility coming from the property casualty segment. This volatility is not going to impair the operating profit, but it's going to have some impact on the net income. Now coming through the liability side, page 8, overall, the key message is that the liability, the way they are measured according to IFRS 9 and 17, is very similar to the way the liability are measured according to Solvency II. That's also an advantage compared to the old system, because now we are getting very close to the Solvency II calculation. There are some small differences that can be the way the contra boundaries are defined, or also the discounting rate is defined, but fundamentally the framework of IFRS 9 and 17 and of Solvency II are very similar. Also in the new accounting regime, similarly to Solvency II, there is a risk margin component, which is a sort of additional buffer that you put on top of the reserves. And then a main item of the new accounting standard, and that's also a difference compared to Solvency II, is the so-called CSM, contractual service margin, which is basically the present value of future profit. In Solvency II, this number will be part of the own fund, so that will be part of the equity. In the case of IFRS 9 and 17, this is a sort of deferred gain, is a liability, but you can think about that as a deferred gain, which is then released into the P&L and into equity over time, just to basically release the profit along the duration of the policy. But fundamentally, this CSM is very much equity-like, and in Solvency II, this number is indeed, that will be part of the own fund. Now if we move to page 9, What does it mean for Allianz? According to the old standard, our shareholder equity was at the beginning of the year 2021 about 80 billion. And now, based on the new system, we have about 60 billion of IFRS equity. The major change is coming from the different treatment of OCI. OCI are the unrealized gains and losses on fixed income and also on equity. As you might remember, at the beginning of the year, we had substantial unrealized gains on fixed income. These, by the way, gains have been vanishing during the course of 2022. In the new accounting standard, there is a way better matching between the asset and the liability, and that's the reason why these unrealized gains that we showed basically under IFRS, the old IFRS, are not necessarily reflected under the new IFRS standard. For the calculation of the ROE, we have always been removing the unrealized gains on fixed income. So from that point of view, in reality, the new accounting standard is just getting closer to the way we have always been looking at our shareholder equity position. On top of it, you had the CSM, which is this present value of future profits. So overall, when you add the two numbers, you can say that the comprehensive capital of Allianz is about 95 billion. Again, that's an approximation, but that gives you a little bit the order of magnitude of the comprehensive shareholder capital that we are looking at. This is also the number that goes into the calculation of the financial leverage. And as you see, according to the old system, the financial leverage of the group was about 26%. According to the new calculation, this number would be more around 23%. So that's what is happening basically on the balance sheet side. So overall, we go from 80 billion of current IFRS equity to 95 billion when you look at the sum of shareholder equity plus CSM. Now moving to page 10 on the operating profit. Overall, I would say we don't expect the operating profit to be much different from the operating profit that we have been seeing under the old accounting standards. Maybe in the short term might be a little bit higher because of the development of the interest rates, and I'm going to explain this later. But fundamentally, we don't expect the level of operating profit to be significantly different in the future. And now coming to the net income, also for the net income, fundamentally, similarly to the operating profit, we expect the net income to be broadly in line with the net income that we had in the past. It's going to be more volatile, and that's because of what I was saying before. There are some assets which are classified now at fair value, and these assets on the property casualty side, they don't have a matching on the liability side, and this can create some level of volatility. This also means that moving forward, we are going clearly to disclose the operating profit. We are clearly going to disclose the shareholder net income, but we are also going to provide in a sort of adjusted net income for the swings in the market value or the fair value assets. And this is also going to be the starting point for the dividend calculation. So we are going to talk not only about operating profit and net income, but we are going also to put emphasis on a sort of adjusted net income for the swings in market value of the assets. Now coming to page 13, starting from the property casualty side. In basically, we have classified almost the entire business under the premium allocation approach, which is very similar, by the way, if you want, in the structure to the old IFRS standard. The difference on the property casualty between the new standard and the old standard is mostly related to the discounting of claims reserve. In the old standard, just a few reserves were discounted, which means you need to discount for the present value of time. And so in the new standards, all reserves had to be, claims reserves had to be discounted to recognize the present value of time. The risk adjustment is also something different compared to what we had in the past, or if we want, is more explicit. But fundamentally, there are no major changes in the property casualty segment, if not for the fact that reserves had to be discounted as opposed to before. What does this mean for our P&L? And we can move to page 14. Here you can see that our underwriting results, according to the current IFRS, is about 3 billion. That's basically our numbers of the 9 months annualized, rounded down a bit. So that's where we stand right now. And now, according to the new accounting standard, we would get a benefit from discounting the claims reserve, because clearly, since rates, interest rates are positive, the present value of a future payment is lower than the value of the future payment. So this is a benefit that we record in the underwriting results, and based on the rate level that we have right now, we would expect this benefit to be about 600 to 900 million, I would say most likely the upper end of this range. So the underwriting result is going to be higher, and clearly, depending on the rate level, the underwriting results can be substantially higher or moderately higher. It has a lot to do with the kind of rate level. If we had done the introduction of IFRS 17 a couple of years ago, the discounting impact would have been very, very minor. So we need to understand this number can be clearly volatile. So that's on the underwriting results. Now, on the combined ratio, we expect the combined ratio to be slightly lower in the new standard. That's basically because of the introduction of this discounting, because the present value of a claim is lower compared to the ultimate cost of the claim. There are other effects that might bring the combined ratio to be higher, but I don't want to be too technical now. Fundamentally, the expectation is that if interest rates are above 1%, we should see a combined ratio which is lower compared to the combined ratio that we had in the old standard. So that's about the technical side. Now, when we go to the investment results, here we start also from an investment results of about 3 billion, which is the number under the current accounting. And here you see we have a negative impact coming from the unwinding or the interest accretion of the reserve. So when you have a reserve that you discount because of the present value of time, then you need also to clearly do the calculation of bringing back over time the present value to the ultimate value. So this calculation to bring back over time the reserve to the ultimate value is going to be accounted for in the investment result. So on the one side, you see a benefit because of the discounting on the underwriting results. On the other side, you're going to see a negative accretion on the investment results. In theory, if you have a so-called steady state situation, so that you do the same things forever in a no-growth scenario, the impact of discounting should be offset one-to-one by the impact of the interest accretion. So if you have no change in anything and you continue to do the same things again and again and again, eventually the two numbers, they should be identical. In reality, clearly, there is never a steady state, and so there will be some noise. But what is important, over time, you should not expect to see, in reality, a different level of profitability. It's just the way the profitability is shown throughout the periods that can change a bit. So that's on the property casualty side. So overall, I would say not a lot of change compared to before. Maybe the only thing is this discounting impact. That's is going to be a little bit of a learning curve at the beginning, because people will have to develop some sensitivity about this discounting effect and the unwinding that happens later. I would say that once we are going to have a few quarters of disclosure on these numbers, I believe this ability to understand this this mechanic is going to be there also from your side. So that's a little bit of an adjustment, but overall, otherwise there are not many significant changes coming in the property casualty segment. The situation is very different from the life side. In this case, we are talking of a different framework, and I would say especially the disclosure on the life side is going to be different from the disclosure that we had so far. And as I was saying before, I believe it's going to be a better disclosure, creating more transparency. Now, at page 19, we start from the balance sheet. And first of all, clearly you had the technical reserves, which is the present value of the cash flow to policyholder and also the associated expenses. This calculation is very similar, as I was saying before, to Solvency II. In the old framework, we were also discounting cash flow because that's always what we do, but not always, this cash flow were not always based on the same mechanic that Solvency II is requiring. So that's the difference. There is a risk adjustment. This risk adjustment was not included in the old standard. This is included in the new standard, and this is also consistent, at least in the philosophy, with Solvency II. And then we had the famous CSM, and the, which is this future profit. And maybe the best way to explain the CSM is the following. Let's assume that we do a policy, a new policy today, and we get 100 of premium. The present value of the benefits that we expect to pay to the policyholder is clearly below 100, should be like 95. The difference of 5, per se, is the profit that we expect to make over the duration of the contract. These 5 in Solvency II will be on funds. In the case of IFRS 17, these 5 is stored in the CSM as a sort of deferred gain, and then it's going to be released in profit over time. So if the contract has a 10 years duration, it's going to be, let's say, 0.5 per annum. I'm simplifying here, obviously. If the contract has a 20 years duration, that will be 0.25 per annum. So think about storing the profit and then releasing the profit over time. The key of releasing the profit has to do at the end of the day with the duration of the contract. So that's on the balance sheet, which means understanding the CSM is important, because the CSM is, if you want, the amount of profit that we expect to generate over the duration of the portfolio. In our case, our CSM is about 55 billion, and that's also important to understand how the CSM can move over time. We would expect the CSM to increase because we are adding new business every year. So in this example, we assume that the CSM should go up by 4 to 5 billion because of generating new business, which is bringing more profit, the famous 5 I was referring before. Then there is also an element of unwinding of the CSM. Basically, since we always do a present value of profit, as time is passed by, goes by, clearly the present value tends to go up. So that's basically this kind of unwinding that we are going to see due to the lapse of time. Then potentially we might have positive or negative deviation coming from experience or assumption changes. Here it might be if mortality assumptions are different compared to our expectation, or if policyholder behavior is different compared to our expectation, or if the economic conditions are different compared to the expectation, this is going to create a fluctuation, the CSM. So this number can be positive, can be negative. Fundamentally, it shouldn't have a bias. Over time, this number should tend to be around zero. And then you add the CSM release, which is basically the amount of profit that you release into the amount of profit that you release into a stated profit every every year, and this is the part which is a function of the duration of the portfolio. So this is how the mechanic works. We expect this number to go up because the it will be a function of how much new business we do compared to the release in profit, but also we need to consider that there is an expectation of having a positive in-force return. So from that point of view, this number, according to our calculations, should go up basically by a couple of billion per annum. And then here we do some adjustment to the CSM to reflect that the way we had to calculate the CSM according to the standard is before it includes only the direct cost associated to the policy, but we think we need to consider also for the total cost associated to the business. So from that point of view, we do a deduction for this cost, which are not reflecting the CSM calculation. Then we need to do also a calculation for taxes and also for minorities in the case we have minorities. So the CSM net is the what we think is the real future profit that we have in our balance sheet. And this is this kind of equity-like amount, which is about 35 billion. If you take the midpoint of this range, that's the 35 billion that we discussed in a few slides before. What is also interesting, page 21, is to see the how the CSM at inception compares to the value of new business that we are used to show to you every quarter. The value of new business of 2.5 is based on the Solvency II calculation. And now here we have the explanation how we go from the Solvency II calculation to the IFRS calculation. The main difference is taxation. The numbers that we have discussed before are basically pre-tax numbers, so we need clearly to bring the calculation from an after-tax basis to a pre-tax basis. And then, as you see, there are a few differences coming from the discounting, or the reserve might be slightly different in IFRS 17 versus Solvency II, and also the risk adjustment calculation is slightly different, but the main driver of the deviation or the difference between Solvency II and IFRS 9 and 17 is basically the gross up for taxes. There are a couple of other adjustments that we do, but they are not really significant. So here you can get a feeling about how a number relates to how the CSM new business relate to the number that you are used to see in our quarterly reporting. Moving forward, we're going to put emphasis clearly on this VNB based on IFRS 9 and 17. Now we come to the operating profit for the segment, which is basically the sum of the following component. You had the CSM release that we saw before. This number is supposed to be very stable. We had the release of the risk adjustment, which is also supposed to be stable. Loss component can create some noise, but we don't expect to see a lot happening there. The non-attributable cost is basically the amount of non-direct cost which we need to clearly reflect in the P&L. This number should also be stable. And then the investment results, this is an area where we might have some volatility coming mostly from our business in the United States, but this volatility shouldn't be higher, and it could be slightly lower compared to the volatility that we have been used to see in the old standard. So overall, I would say the majority of the components flowing into our operating profit are pretty stable. So from that point of view, we expect the operating profit in the future to be broadly at the same level of the operating profit that we have right now, and also potentially more stable. If you ask me, when you look at the disclosure, it's going to be easier to explain the numbers because you will get a good sense about the CSM evolution, how the CSM get released into profit, and then the other component, as said, tend to be relatively stable. So that's on the life side, and coming now to the end of the presentation. Again, the fundamentals are not different, so the fundamentals of the business are the same, which also means the accounting standard is going to reflect basically more or less the same storyline. So we're not going to have a much different operating profit. We are not going to have a much different net income. The ROE is going to be slightly higher because the shareholder equity is a little bit lower, but fundamentally, what you're going to see moving forward is not much different from what you saw so far. So the benefit, as I was saying before, is coming from the disclosure. I strongly believe that on the life side, once we are going to work with the numbers, once you are going to get used to the CSM and to the evolution of the CSM, you are going to get a better appreciation for how the life business is behaving over time, and I believe this is going to be, from an analytical point of view, also for analysts and investors, a better way to try to understand our life business. Final slides, that's on the timeline moving forward. In February, we're going to have our annual conference call, where we're going to disclose basically the numbers for 2022 based on the old IFRS. What we are going to do is to give an outlook for 2023 based on the new IFRS. So when we are going to talk about the outlook for 2023, this is going to be based on the logically on the new IFRS, and this is going to be also an opportunity to create some further education on this new accounting framework. Then in March, we are going to publish the annual report. And in that annual report, you're going to see the balance sheet per beginning of 2022. And so you're going to get not an approximation of the numbers, but you're going to get the real numbers. And then when we do the disclosure for Q1 2023 in May, we're going to show you the P&L for 2022. And also clearly we're going to have the reporting of Q1 based on the new standard. So I would say that so we're going to have a few touch points next year to further discuss the numbers, and by Q1 2023 we're going to be in the new world. And with that, I would like to get your questions.
Thank you, Giulio. So yes, we are approaching quickly the new world, and I also understand that not all insurers are disclosing a full set of numbers in the quarters. No, some do in the first quarter, some only do with the second quarter, and we come to that maybe later. If you want to ask a question and you have used the web audio call, please press talk request to reserve your place. If you are dialing in with the telephone, please press star 5. So we've already a couple of questions coming in. Our first question comes from Maximilian Volz from Versicherungswirtschaft. Please, Maximilian, go ahead. Your line should be open. You can start talking. Unfortunately, we cannot hear you. So wait, then I would say we try with the next question. The next in line is Christopher Kundi from Insurance ERM. Your line is open.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Giulio and Romain, for this presentation today. A couple of questions for me. Could you just summarize your philosophy when you came to be making decisions about IFRS 17 implementation, by which I mean, did you choose to have the least deviation from IFRS 4 or the closer alignment to Solvency II? And a second question, just specifically on discount rates, can you explain a little bit about how you are going about that and whether you see your methodology aligning with other insurers in the sector? Thank you.
No, thank you for your question. So our philosophy in IFRS 17 was not necessarily to try to mimic IFRS 4, plus the framework is different. So in reality was to try to leverage as much as possible on the Solvency II calculation. We think there is a value clearly in having a footprint, if you want, that is similar, then clearly because of the standard, IFRS 9 and 17 standard, there are some differences, more in the way you recognize the profit, you know, the CSM release. For example, there is not a notion of a CSM under Solvency II, and IFRS 9 and 17, or IFRS 17, is always trying to create then eventually a P&L view. But fundamentally, the idea was to try to leverage as much as possible on the IFRS, on the Solvency II framework. Some choices, but this is not a choice of Allianz. This is what the industry has tried to achieve, working together with the ISB, was to see how we can limit the amount of volatility in the P&L. But again, this is more about how you reflect basically the change in the balance sheet into the P&L. So from that point of view, part of the conversation that we had over time with the in the industry and together with the ISB was really how to find a system that can minimize unwanted volatility in the P&L. But definitely not the attempt to recreate the old IFRS, that was not the idea. On your question regarding the discount rates, basically we are starting from the Solvency II framework. There are some modifications that we do, for example, the amount of application ratio that you use under Solvency II versus IFRS 9 and 17, but basically we are starting from that framework. When we, you know, I can tell you something. We try to do a sort of comparison between what the discount rates that different companies are using. That was part of an analysis that has been done on an anonymous base, and I will say that we're not all using the same discount rates. But I would say the dispersion of discount rates seems to be relatively small. So there is not identity, but there is fundamentally consistency in the approach. And some companies might have a little bit of a higher discount rate. Some companies might have a little bit of a lower discount rate. But there is not a significant difference. So that's one of the advantages of IFRS 9 and 17. You get to a framework which might not be implemented identically, but definitely, first of all, the framework is the same, and then it's easier to have an appreciation of what the differences might be.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of other questions, but let me give an opportunity for other people to ask first. Thank you.
Okay, welcome. Yeah.
Thank you, Christopher. So the next question comes from Jonas Tauber from Versicherungsmonitor. Jonas, I think the line is now open.
Yeah, thank you very much. For me, some question. Would you say is the major advantage of the change to the new set of rules? And where do you expect the major challenges, or at what point do you look for, and are you yourself like looking forward how it's going to turn out? Then I've read that I would be interested how the net result you think is going to be affected of Allianz. And I read that the dividend should be based on the adjusted net result. So isn't that like a contradiction that you have this new set of rules and then you will always have to also account the adjusted result? So is this kind of counterplaying the advantages of the new set of rules? That's it. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your question. So on the first point, I think it's the advantage is more transparency. And I'm not referring so much to the property casualty side, because in the property casualty side, it was very easy to understand the numbers. One might even argue that the introduction discount is going to create first a little bit of a further need for explanation, but fundamentally the property casualty side, we don't see a lot of advantage. But when you look at the life side, definitely, you know, the framework is more consistent, and over time, one can really try to estimate what is going to happen to our numbers. Right now, if you are an analyst or investor, it's very difficult to model the business. In the future, they should be able to model what happens to the CSM release. To the extent we're going to provide also information about the sensitivity of the CSM, they might be able also to try to understand how the CSM is moving when markets are moving. They're going to have visibility also on the operating variances. So if you are a company having a lot of operating variances, which is mortality assumption going away from the actual assumption, actual mortality being different from the assumption, then you're going somehow to see this reflected. So I think you get way more information to try to understand what is happening in the life business. It's going to take clearly maybe a few quarters or a couple of years before you build a history, but it's just a framework that will allow more transparency. We see this also internally. Clearly, internally, we have a lot of analytics that we can run. This framework makes it easier to follow basically what happens to the profit pattern over time. So the big advantage is more transparency. So I'm very confident that in 2-3 years down the road, when we are going to speak about our life business, we are going to have a more educated conversation compared to the conversation that we had based on the old standard, which was, by the way, a collection of very different way to do accounting for life insurance. On your other question about the volatility of the net results and whether it's not a contradiction to say the new framework is better, but then we need to adjust the net results, I would say, first of all, the volatility is coming more from IFRS 9, not from IFRS 17. So if we want to find the villain here is not IFRS 17, that would be IFRS 9. The point why I would say it's not that big of a deal, because it's a very easy adjustment to make. So we're going to remove volatility, and it's very easy to understand what we're going to remove. The kind of problem when you start removing things that you cannot really trace and recognize. That would be a very simple adjustment just to avoid that we are going to add these swings due to fair value impacting our dividend. But, you know, it's a very simple, logical adjustment. So from that point of view, there is not a concern that we are creating some sort of metric where you are going to say it's a sort of black box, how you go from the net income to the adjusted net income. So from that point of view, I would not be concerned about that adjustment. And again, this is more coming from IFRS 9. It has to do more with property casualty on the life side, which is more the area where we see a big improvement. This is in reality not the case.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you, Jonas. Our next question comes from Cynthia Chong, if I pronounce that correctly, hopefully, from Mallow Street. Please go ahead, Cynthia. The line is open, Cynthia, but we cannot hear you. I hope it's not due to technical problems. Unfortunately, we cannot hear you.
Can we go back to insurance ERM? Because he has some questions.
Yes, maybe. But Christopher, if you have further questions, there he is again. Okay, then Christopher Kundi again with your additional questions.
Oh, thank you very much. First of all, do you have any more decisions that you need to make about your IFRS 17 and 9 implementation, or are you happy with where you are now and it's just a case of crunching through numbers and producing balance sheets? And the second question is, can you estimate how much you have invested to comply with these new accounting standards? And I guess a third question from that is, apart from complying with the standard, has the investment produced any benefits for the business?
Yeah, no, thank you for your question. So regarding the where we are in the process of implementing the standard. We are basically done, right? So from that point of view, it's we have all elements. We basically have an opening balance sheet. Also, we discussed already with the auditor, so there are clearly the auditing procedure that have to be finalized and take place, but basically the implementation of the standard is has been completed from our side. Then, as always, in the future, we might have some learning experiences. This happened also with the under the old accounting, but for the time being, that's basically, yeah, for us, the job is completed, so now it's just about basically getting live. And then also, as you can imagine, there are always a lot of analytics that you had to further develop. So from that point of view, clearly there is all the work to create basically the numbers for the line of business and so on. But all the framework is done. We had the numbers. So from that point of view, we are basically done. On the cost of implementing the IFRS 17, I would say that over time we are speaking of about 200 million euro of cost. So think about there's been an implementation of several years. So that's the cost that we have estimated. And I have to say that we have been, there was the estimation that we did a few years ago about the cost of the program. And there's been a project where also the actual cost has been very much in line with our expectation. And then a final point about the benefit. We see benefit basically coming from this higher transparency. So now we're going to, we have to be proven right. So then when investors and you guys are going to look at the disclosure in the future, you're going to find this disclosure to be beneficial. That's what we think is going to be the case. Also, we find this to be a better framework compared to the framework we had so far. And if you are going to agree with our position, this will be a big benefit. So that's where we are positive and looking forward. But eventually, your feedback is going to be very important too.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you, Christopher. For the time being, we have no further question. Once again, if you want to use the possibility to ask a last question, please press talk request if you are dialed in with web audio call, or press star 5 on your telephone. So we have again Maximilian from Versicherungswirtschaft heute. Now let's try again whether it works. Maximilian, the line should be open. Again, I'm so sorry, it's not working. Then we do, Maximilian, you can give us a call afterwards. We have a question from Alexander Hübner from Reuters, and we can please open the line from Alexander. No longer there. So we seem to have some problems. I'm sorry for that. Alexander, now your line is open, Alexander.
Hallo, hören Sie mich jetzt?
We can hear you, yes.
Ah, Alexander Hübner here. just one minor questions. Looking at the future balance sheet, what impact will the new rules have on your return on equity? On equity or on capital employed, can you give us a hint on that?
Yes, so we would expect our ROE to go up by a good 1 percentage point. So if you think we always say we want to have an ROE higher than 13%. So with this change that we see, this ROE should be more towards the 15%. So this doesn't mean that we are going now to change necessarily the target right away, but clearly, implicitly, you're going to see that our ROE is going to go up by a good one percentage point under the new accounting standard. So, which means we are going to be at a 15% ROE level, maybe even slightly higher. This should be the level that you're going to see moving forward.
Okay. Are there any other targets that you will have to change according to IFRS 9/17?
No, because I would say, you know, we expect the profit to be more or less the same. So from that point of view, when we look at EPS, it's basically unchanged. When we have the dividend philosophy is anyway based on a ratchet, it's based on a payment of dividend, which is 50% of the net income. We are going to adjust the net income because of this volatility. So fundamentally, I would say the targets that we communicated in the Capital Market Day last year are the same, and the thing that is going to happen automatically is this ROE is going to get a lift. So from that point of view, exceeding the ROE of 13% should be relatively easy, and that's the reason why eventually we're going to end up talking about an ROE level of about 15% moving forward.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
So there are no further questions, as I can see. I apologize for those who didn't make it and where we had some technical problems. Please feel free to contact us afterwards, and we try to clarify and answer your questions. Thank you for your interest and participation, and have a nice day.
Thank you. Have a nice day. Bye.
Bye-bye.